Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, send it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Before we do get started, I do want to let you know the program is brought to you in part by the financial support of our listeners. And I want to thank Johnny so much for his support. He became a Patreon at the rookie level, which is a sponsorship level of $2 or more per month. You can become a Patreon sponsor at patreon.greatdetectives.net. And you can also support the show on a one-time basis at support.greatdetectives.net. Well, today we turn to Kathy Lewis, who played Phyllis and was actually one of the very best character actresses in old-time radio. She had regular roles on this show, as well as on The Great Gildersleeve and My Friend Irma. And she starred in a series of anthology plays with her then-husband Elliot Lewis and On Stage. A total of 3,000 appearances for Kathy Lewis in radio. And she certainly really has shined so far in this series. And with that said, we're going to get into today's episode of Michael Shane. The original air date on this one is April the 16th of 1945, and the title is The Left-Handed Clue.
The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. The people who make 76 Gasoline and Triton Motor Oil, Union Oil Company, present The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis. Most private detectives, when they're called into a case by a wealthy patron, are ushered into the library or the gun room or the master's private den. Not so private detective Michael Shane and his attractive assistant Phyllis Knight. Oh, no. They find themselves at San Francisco's Cliff House to keep a date with, well, let Phyllis tell it, which she is doing without any of the poetry she knows so well.
Now, there's no use arguing, Mike Shane. If she weren't a blonde and good-looking, you'd have turned the case down.
For the 1,000th time, honey, I tell you, I haven't seen the girl.
Oh, really?
She isn't blonde, and I don't know whether or not she's good-looking.
I'll bet.
I only know, honey, that she's frightened.
Mm-hmm.
She said she was a brunette, 5'2", and wearing a Kelly green raincoat.
Well, then, there she is.
Hmm?
Staring out the window.
Right, Angel. Well, leave us ankle over.
You know, she does look scared. Oh, she saw us. Hey, does she know you?
No, but I told her I was bringing you along and there aren't any other couples around.
Mr. Shane and Miss Knight?
Correct. You're Miss Jones?
Well, no. Well, that is, I use that name over the phone, but my real name is Wright. Not Patricia Wright? Yes.
Hmm?
Oh, then it was your brother. I mean, I read the article in the papers.
Say, what is all this?
My brother was killed Monday. The police said it was an accident. He fell over the cliff, they said, but...
But you think he was killed deliberately?
Yes.
Murdered, in fact.
Yes.
Why?
I just know he was pushed over that cliff.
And now, whom do you suspect?
I don't know. My father's manager, Mr. Haberman, for one, and,
hmm?
And a Mr. Armstrong, a businessman dealing with my father, And
your father?
Well, yes. Well, not that I think my father killed my brother, no, but... Well, I am suspicious of some of my father's business dealings and very suspicious of some of his associates.
Miss Wright, your brother was in the business with your father?
Yes, and, well, he didn't approve of some of their deals.
Did he complain to you or to your father, or both?
Both. They've had bitter quarrels over some of their transactions.
And how about you, Miss Wright? Are you afraid for your own life?
Yes, terribly afraid.
Okay, that settles it so far as I'm concerned. We'll take the case. Now, how about going out to your place and looking over the ground?
But we can't. That's why I use the assumed name, and that's why I met you here instead of at the house.
Listen, Patricia, your best safeguard is to let the murderer know that you have a detective on the job. The very fact that you've engaged me will make them wonder how much you know.
We'll watch out for you, Miss Wright. Nothing's going to happen to you while Mike's on the job.
Well, all right, I'll do it.
Fine.
Good. Now get in your car, then, and we'll follow you out, and even if he turns out to be your father, we'll get the killer.
Thank you.
It's over here, just by that white post. That's where he fell.
Uh-huh. Oh, boy. Did they take your brother's body away from the bottom of the cliff or bring it up here on ropes?
Well, they took it away from the bottom in a boat.
I see. Was there much of a crowd here at the top?
No. Why?
Well, there are a lot of footprints here. The ground is pretty well tramped down.
But there weren't any people here at all. Why, this is private property.
The murderer tramped the ground to confuse. Hey, wait a minute.
What? What is it, Mike?
Honey, you see those marks?
Yeah.
Those marks were made by a dead man's heels as his body was dragged to the edge of the cliff and thrown over.
And the killer hid behind the tree.
Yes, and probably hit his victim with a rock.
Yeah.
Patricia, did your brother have a date with anyone the night he was killed?
Yes, with Mr. Haberman, Daddy's partner. Mr. Haberman came out to the house at 8 o'clock.
Hmm?
Said that he'd made an appointment to meet my brother. But about 10 o'clock, he decided to go home. Just as he was leaving, the chauffeur came to the door and said that they'd found the body down on the rocks below the cliff.
Was the chauffeur looking for your brother?
No, we didn't know anything was wrong then. The chauffeur was out fishing and was just coming into the little cove when he saw a hat on the water. He turned the boat along the rocks and found my brother's body.
The chauffeur is up at the house now?
No, he left.
He left? He left? What do you mean?
Well, he'd been doing a lot of drinking, and my brother fired him about a week ago.
Oh, fine. We seem to be turning up suspects wherever we move.
Yeah, right, Angel. Well, Miss Patricia, will you get your father's manager and Mr. Armstrong up to the house right away? Use any excuse at all. I'll get Inspector Faraday to find the chauffeur, and we'll have a little quiz contest with Mike Shane as quizmaster.
I don't know what on earth you could be thinking of, Patricia, to do such a thing.
But, Daddy...
Not another word. You tell this Shane fellow to get about his business. When any private detectives are hired to come to this house, I'll do the hiring.
Daddy, I'm more convinced than ever that my brother was murdered.
Murdered? Stuff and nonsense. My dear, you're upset. I don't blame you for that. You were very fond of your brother. But thinking for one moment that any of my business associates could be guilty of such a thing... The idea of dragging Mr. Haberman and Mr. Armstrong out here to be cross-questioned by a private detective. Why, it isn't as if there was any suspicion about your brother's death. The police were satisfied it was an accident.
I'm not satisfied, however, Mr. Wright.
Who are you, sir?
Michael Shane, private detective, and this is my assistant, Miss Knight.
Hello, I'm very happy to meet you, Mr. Wright.
I'm sorry I can't say the same.
Hmm?
I hate to appear impolite, but I must ask you to leave my house immediately.
Well, let's go, Mike. We don't have to take this sort of thing from anybody.
Just a minute, Angel.
Oh, really?
Mr. Wright, I suppose you realize that by your attitude, you're casting a lot of unnecessary suspicion on yourself.
Why, you impudent young whelp. If I were a younger man, I'd thrash you within an inch of your life, you... Will you leave quietly, or will I have to have you thrown out? Evidently, there's company at the door, and I'd much prefer not to have to introduce you.
Pardon me, sir, but Mr. Faraday.
Faraday?
Detective Inspector Faraday, sir. With the chauffeur, sir.
Hello, Mike. Fellas.
Hello, Inspector. Mr. Wright here was just about to order us thrown out. He won't have a private detective around the place.
I see. Well, maybe he'll let you stay as my assistant.
What on earth are you talking about?
I'm talking about the fact that we're here to investigate the death of your son. I'd just as soon get on with the questioning if you haven't any objections. Will you have everybody come in here?
Inspector, they're all out in the front hall.
I don't know what this is all about. I'm only the chauffeur. I haven't done anything. I'll sue you for arresting me.
That's right. Be sure and do that. All right, into the front hall.
Well,
which one of you is Haberman?
I'm Mr. Haberman. Why?
And Armstrong, that's you, I suppose.
Mm-hmm, correct.
Now, I don't know much about this except what Mike told me over the phone, but I understand that you, Mr. Haberman... had an appointment with Mr. Wright Jr., the deceased, the evening he was killed.
Yes, that is true.
What was that meeting about?
Well, I don't see that it's any of your business.
You can answer that question here and now or at headquarters later. Take your choice.
Well, it was a business matter.
Don't answer him.
But Wright, if I don't, he'll take me in and...
And he'll have to answer in the long run. It was business, and young Mr. Wright was going to tell you that he wouldn't play along with the kind of deal you and his father were cooking up, correct?
Well, that's putting it rather strongly. He was a young fellow, too many idealistic ideas for the business world. I was quite certain I could straighten him out when we sat down and talked it over.
And when he wouldn't listen, you threatened his life?
Of course not.
You didn't see him that night at all?
No, I didn't.
And you weren't anywhere near the top of the cliff between 8 and 10:30?
I most certainly was not.
Can you prove that?
I can. I sat and talked with Mr. Haberman all evening.
And Mr. Armstrong, I suppose you have an alibi, too?
Well, I don't know. I think I was at a picture show that night, but I wasn't keeping track of my movements. I wasn't anywhere near this house, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Inspector.
Yes, Mike.
Come here. I think we ought to do some checking on the murdered man's papers. We might find something that would give us a lead.
You're probably right, Mike. Okay, you can all go now. But don't leave the place. We may want to a few more answers before we leave. Miss Patricia.
Yes, Inspector.
Will you take us to your brother's room? We'll see what that leads us to.
Did you find anything, honey?
Uh-uh. Nothing important, Mike.
How about you, Inspector?
Nothing. I hope we're not on a wild goose chase.
Oh, I know we're not.
Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Here's something.
What is it, Mike?
What'd you find, Mike?
It's a memo pad. And here's an entry. It says, must talk to father about Haberman's inability to do things honestly. If he can be so dishonest with the people we are doing business with, there will come a day when he will be as dishonest with us.
Hey, look at that later entry, Mike. The one made the day he was killed. Here.
Oh, yes.
We'll have showdown with Haberman tonight. Either he goes or I get out of the business. Have called him and made appointment for 7 o'clock.
Wait a minute. 7 o'clock? Haberman said he made the appointment for 8 o'clock.
Yeah, that's
he
right.
He did.
Come on. Come on, we'd better hurry up looking through this stuff, and then a little more questioning for Mr. Haberman.
What's the matter?
What's the matter? What's the matter?
Mr. Shane, Inspector, it's unbelievable. It's horrible.
What is it? What is it?
No. Haberman. I went to the stables a few minutes ago.
Go on, go on.
Haberman was lying there, dead.
In just a moment, we'll rejoin Mike Shane and his assistant Phyllis in their adventures. All of us know that some restaurants always seem to serve better food than others, even though their menus may read the same. The reason, of course, is simple. Better ingredients plus extra attention on the part of skilled help. The same principles apply to car lubrication. For example, Union Oil stopwear lubrication is more than just a grease job. Stopwear lubrication is a highly specialized servicing process. Only trained attendants using the latest and most modern equipment are allowed to service your car. Each fitting and bearing is thoroughly lubricated with the finest, high-quality greases, in accordance with the manufacturer's specifications. While your car is on the hoist, the Minutemen inspect out-of-sight points and check them for danger signs. As final evidence of the care and exactness with which stopwear lubrication is performed, you receive a 1,000-mile written guarantee with each job. Definite proof of reliable service. So, ladies and gentlemen, since careful, thorough lubrication is so vital to the life of your car, why not buy Stopwear? Stopwear guaranteed lubrication is available only at Union Oil Minuteman stations, and it costs no more than ordinary lubrication. Just look for the sign of the big orange and blue 76. Thank you. It is a few minutes later. Mike, Phyllis, and Inspector Faraday have reached the stables and stand looking down at Haberman's body.
Now, how did it happen?
Well, he just got too close to Prince, and Prince lashed out and kicked him. I found him lying here when I came by.
Was anybody else around the stables?
Yes, Armstrong was here, and the groom and the gardener.
Isn't it a bit odd that everyone should gather at the stables?
No, I don't think so. Everybody's interested in the horses, especially Prince.
Why Prince?
Well, I've warned them all to keep away from him. He's a killer.
Why have you kept him, then?
Because I can handle him. So can the stable hands, and he's a very valuable horse. He just lashes out at strangers or people who don't talk to him as they approach him.
Hmm.
Surely you don't think this is murder, too?
Hmm?
Why, it's ridiculous. Nobody in their right mind can have any doubt as to how Haberman was killed. The mark of the horseshoe is as plain, too plain. Well, you can see the curve of the shoe across his forehead.
Perhaps I'm not in my right mind, Mr. Wright, but when two men engaged in the same business die within a few days of each other, I'm suspicious.
You and me both, Mike.
Mr. Wright, you just walked out from the house and found Haberman lying dead.
Well, more or less. I came out from the back of the house.
Hmm?
Saw that the upper half of the door to Prince's stall was unlatched. I came over to latch it and found Haberman. I couldn't see him lying on the ground from where I was because, as you can see, he was hidden by the water trough.
Yes. Yes, I see. So, Inspector, depending on how you look at it, everybody has alibis or nobody has an alibi.
You're right, Mike. They all have alibis if they're telling the truth.
Well, I most certainly have. I was talking on the telephone from the time I left you until I came out here. The servant saw me in the hall when I was on the phone.
Oh, yes, and the chauffeur and the stable boy, Joe, saw me at the back of the stables. I didn't even come around front until Wright called out.
That's true. I'm his alibi and he's mine.
So I'm afraid, Mr. Shane, you'll have to pin the guilt on the horse after all.
Yeah, it looks that way, doesn't it?
Oh, Mike.
Yes, Inspector?
How about running down to headquarters with me?
Okay, but you're going to leave someone here.
Well, I hardly think we need...
Inspector, for 24 hours, I'd like someone posted at the stables and at the west side of the house looking out toward the cliff.
Yeah, but Mike...
If only to guarantee the safety of Miss Wright.
Okay, Mike, I'll leave the sergeant and one man. Will that satisfy you?
Excellent, Inspector, excellent. And now I'm quite ready to accompany you to headquarters.
Okay, here you are, Inspector. Report on a threatening telegram. A threatening wire addressed to Haberman was handed in at San Francisco's main office. No one remembers what the man looked like. They paid no attention.
Okay, follow through on the chauffeur, will you?
Yes, sir.
Well, it's not much help.
Why don't you give up, Mike? After all, we're just following nothing but a hunch from that girl, Patricia.
Yeah, that's right, Mike. I admit it's a bit gruesome having two deaths in the same household, but it's happened before.
Oh, there's something wrong about the whole thing.
What do you mean, Mike?
Well, as I see it, the father, Mr. Wright, isn't above entering into shady deals.
No, that seems apparent.
So one can legitimately assume that his manager, Haberman, wasn't averse to entering into the same sort of deal.
We don't have to assume that. We know it from the son's memo pad.
Yeah, that's right. The son actually accused him of being crooked.
And we have Armstrong, a business associate. We can assume in his case, too, that he's not above turning a sort of twisted penny.
To all of which the son is opposed. To such an extent that he actually puts in writing that he's going to talk to his father and that either the crooked manager goes or he does.
Right. And if we assume, too, that the father would rather have his son in the business than the crooked manager, we have motive for murder. For some men, at least.
And we have Haberman making a date to see the son.
Which Haberman says was for 8 o'clock, but which we know for a fact was at 7 o'clock.
You're building quite a case, Mike, but it all hinges on supposition. Suppose, Mike, that you're right.
Yeah?
And if you are right, and Haberman did kill the son, justice has already overtaken him.
Yeah, but there's something wrong with the whole thing, Inspector. You say I'm building the whole case of a supposition.
Well, plus a hunch of the girl's, Mike.
And a funny little quirk that keeps running through my own mind.
What?
Well, when I was a kid, I used to hold horses at the old Fairfax Hunt Club.
Yes?
Sometimes for a whole day's work, I made 2 bits. One day, well, I hadn't made my 2 bits. I guess I was a little on the anxious side. I stepped up too quickly to a horse. He lashed out at me, and I jumped back. But that hoof, with its iron shoe, seemed to be following me. It was as huge as a barn door. A great big black iron shoe that would mash my face in from chin to forehead. A great big letter U coming at...
Go on, go on.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute, a big U. That's it. That's what's wrong with the picture. Oh, what a blockhead I've been.
Say, what goes?
What is it, Mike?
Oh, come on. Can't you picture Haberman lying there on the ground by the stable?
Well, sure I can,
Don't
but...
you remember what Wright said? The mark of the horseshoe is as plain, too plain. You can see the curve of the shoe across his forehead.
I remember him saying that, but what an... Mike, you're right.
Well, I don't get it.
Huh?
Yes, I do. Haberman would have had to be standing on his head for the horseshoe to have left a mark like that.
Atta girl, honey, the mark was upside down. Come on, come on. Back to the Wright stables as fast as that squad car of yours will take us, Faraday. Go right back to the stables, Inspector. We can park there.
Right, Mike.
I'm going to follow my hunch as long as I'm in the mood.
What do you mean, hunch?
If I were a killer and had killed a man at the stables...
Yes?
And I was so certain that everybody would think it was an accident, and so nobody would even think of looking for a weapon...
Yeah, yeah.
Where would I go to hide the weapon?
The hayloft.
Right. So, come on, up these steps. Here, honey, I'll help you there.
Well, I'm not very good at this.
I know that, but come on. There we are. Now you take the far end, honey.
And I'll climb up onto the raft.
Okay, and I'll take this end. It's not behind the speed box. It's not here either. Where is it? Where's Phyllis?
Here, under this load of hay.
Okay. Anything up there, Inspector?
No, everything up here is covered with dust, so I think this is all in the clear.
Okay, come down then before you break your neck.
Ooh.
What is it, honey?
Oh, a
It's something heavy and wet.
Huh?
And sort of sticky. It's blood, Mike.
Let me have it. I'll use my handkerchief. There may be fingerprints.
What is it?
Just a second. Oh, ye gods. Look, Inspector.
A heavy piece of timber.
Oh, but with a horseshoe nailed to the flat side.
Upside down. Okay. Okay, let's keep our find a secret and continue our quizzing.
We'll rejoin Mike Shane, Phyllis Knight, and Inspector Faraday in their search for the killer in just a moment. We'd like you to listen for a moment to one of the most sickening sounds of modern life. Lately, you've been hearing that sound more frequently. Traffic accidents in the United States are increasing to an alarming extent as our automobiles grow older. To reduce human casualties and conserve transportation, the International Association of Chiefs of Police has developed a program to emphasize the need for good brakes for all cars. For the next 6 weeks, law enforcement officers throughout the nation will conduct a brake-checking campaign. They are seeking to protect your life and property. This program on brake emphasis for traffic safety is supported by over 100 automobile clubs and traffic organizations, including the Office of Defense Transportation. Your cooperation is earnestly requested. You can help by checking your own brakes. If you can depress your brake pedal within an inch of the floorboard before the brakes take hold, they are inadequate and demand immediate attention. Remember, serious accidents can occur at speeds as low as 20 miles per hour if your brakes are in poor condition. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you have the slightest doubt about the condition of your automobile brakes, don't take chances. Have them inspected without delay. Mike, Phyllis, Inspector Faraday, and Patricia Wright are in the library waiting for the members of the household to put in an appearance.
Are you sure you don't want me to get Daddy and the others in here?
No, not yet. We let them wander in one at a time and take them by surprise. I have a reason.
Hey, what about the chauffeur, Mike?
For my money, he's out.
Hmm. Why, Mike?
Well, as a suspect for the killing of the son who fired him, he was a possibility, but I see no connection between him and Haberman's death.
No, perhaps not. But don't forget one thing. He's the alibi for Armstrong, just as Armstrong is his alibi.
The way I'm thinking right now, honey, no one has an alibi.
What do you mean?
When all the suspects have alibis for their actions, and yet you have two bodies to account for, there's only one answer.
And that is?
Someone or all of them are lying. And the alibis mean nothing, so just ignore them.
Mike, somebody's coming.
That's right.
Oh, there you are, Pat. What? Oh, I thought you'd all gone back to the city.
We did, sir, but we have a few more questions we'd like answered.
If you don't mind my saying so, I think you're not quite bright.
Hmm?
Meaning what, Mr. Wright?
Meaning that you're all following a completely senseless theory, trying to find clues to a murder when no murder has been committed. To everyone but you, it's obvious that Mr. Haberman had been kicked by Prince.
Suppose we just skip that for a moment, huh? Mr. Wright, just exactly what is the relationship between your firm and Mr. Armstrong?
I don't see that it's any of your business.
Oh, now let's not go through that routine
if
again.
If you'd let me finish, I still think it's none of your business, but I'm perfectly willing to tell you. Mr. Armstrong is an agent for some eastern industrial properties which we're considering purchasing.
I see. And was Mr. Haberman in complete agreement with you about this purchase?
He was up until a few nights ago.
What or who changed his mind?
Well, my son wasn't too happy about the deal, and I think he changed Haberman's mind.
When did your son tell you that you either fired Haberman or he would leave the company?
What? Why?
Now. Don't get all insulted and abusive. We know your son did tell you that.
Patricia, if you...
Your daughter had nothing to do with our knowing that, Mr. Wright.
Let's not argue about it. It is true, isn't it?
Yes.
And what did you decide?
Well, go on. Answer.
Well, I hadn't made up my mind. I sort of hoped that things would work themselves out.
And they have, sir. First, by the death of your son, and next, Haberman. Both troublesome elements removed within a week.
Surely you don't... You can't think that I'd connive in the death of my own son. Patricia, you...
Yes, Father.
You don't believe that I had anything to do with...
No, Dad.
And I don't either. Nor do Miss Knight and Inspector Faraday.
Well, I'm glad of that. I'm glad, too, that you're coming to your senses and realizing that my boy's death was an accident.
No, Mr. Wright, your son's death was not an accident, any more than Haberman's was.
But, well, who could you possibly suspect?
Who stands to gain by both deaths?
Why, no one.
What about Armstrong?
Armstrong? But Armstrong... You mean that Armstrong was afraid that my son's objection to our deal and later Haberman's objection might cause the deal to fall through?
Exactly, Mr. Wright, and it's very easy to prove, that is. It will be easy if you will cooperate.
Oh, certainly. I'll cooperate in any way I can, but...
You haven't been very cooperative so far, Mr. Wright.
Yes, well, I'll do whatever you ask me to.
Now we're getting somewhere. Now here's what we'll do. Phyllis, the inspector, and I will hide. Phyllis behind the curtains leading to the terrace. The inspector in a closet.
Got it.
And I'll get behind the door.
Yes?
Patricia will go to her own room. You, Mr. Wright, will call Armstrong in and tell him you're not going through with the deal. I'm quite certain his reaction will be enough to convince you.
Well, I don't think I'll find that difficult. I'd practically made up my mind to that anyway.
Armstrong is coming in the front door, the hall.
Oh. All right. Now, quick, everybody. Quick. Get set. You run upstairs, Patricia. Go on. Okay, right. Call him in.
That you, Armstrong?
Yes. Did you want me?
Yes. I think, in spite of all the tragedy around here, that we ought to arrive at some definite conclusion about this transaction.
Well, I suppose you're right. I didn't want to hurry you or seem aggressive with all the things that have happened.
Yes, I understand.
But it is an excellent opportunity, and I know you'll make a mint out of it.
I'm not going through with it, however.
What?
I'm not going through with it, Armstrong.
Oh, you're not. Well, that's what you think.
What was that you said?
I said that if you think you're going to back out now, you've got another thing coming.
Oh, wait a minute.
You're not leaving me holding the sack. I've obligated myself for those properties, and you're going to buy them.
I'm most certainly not going to buy them if I don't want to.
And maybe this will persuade you.
Put that gun down, you fool.
Drop it, Armstrong. The next time, be faster.
What is this? Is this a trap?
In a way it is, yes, and apparently quite a justifiable one.
I must apologize for the gunplay. And I must apologize for being quite slow and somewhat blind.
Blind, Mike?
Yes, I should have noticed long before this that Mr. Armstrong was left-handed. I didn't, however, until he whipped out that gun of his with his left hand.
Left-handed?
Yes, Phil, left-handed.
What does that matter? I've been left-handed all my life.
Yes, Armstrong, left-handed. I think you can produce the evidence now, Inspector.
Right, Mike.
Did you ever see that weapon before, Armstrong?
Where did you find it?
In the hayloft.
That's where you hid it, isn't it, Armstrong? Okay, Inspector, I don't think we'll get any more argument out of him. You ready, Armstrong?
Yes.
You want some more coffee, Inspector?
No, thanks, Phyllis. That was an excellent dinner.
Oh, say that again. Angel's a good cook.
Flatterer.
As well as being good at poetry reviews.
Oh. Say, that left-handed business, I've been turning it over and over in my mind. I don't see what on earth Armstrong's being left-handed had to do with the case at all. Well, I thought perhaps his being left-handed was, well, responsible for him nailing the horseshoe on the club the wrong way.
Oh, no, Angel, no. That was just the inevitable slip that a murderer makes.
Well, then what was the left-handed clue?
When I remarked on Armstrong's being left-handed, you repeated it after me, remember?
Yeah, sure.
I caught the look in Mike's eye and repeated it after you.
Well, yes, I remember that, too. It impressed me, but I didn't catch on.
Ah, then it impressed Armstrong, too, and he didn't catch on. He didn't know why or what we had in mind, and the inspector and I didn't give him time to find out. We played cat and mouse with him. Armstrong thought that his being left-handed was a clue. He couldn't figure out what it was. But our tone of voice convinced him that we had him dead to rights. And, well, he broke down.
Smarty.
Hmm?
It was nothing but playing up a guilty conscience.
Right, Angel. One of the best weapons a private detective has. So let it be a lesson to you there, darling. And don't try holding out anything on your old man, Mike Shane, or your good old conscience will get you. See?
tune in again next week at 8:30 for another adventure with Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis, and Joe Forte as Inspector Faraday. Tonight's story was written and produced by David Taylor and based on the character created by Brett Halliday. Music was composed and directed by Bernard Katz. This is John Lang saying goodnight for the people who make 76 Gasoline and Triton Motor Oil, Union Oil Company. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
Welcome back. Well, a good story, though a little bit more puzzle-based and deduction-based than I'd expect a Michael Shane story to be. In some ways, it almost seemed like it was like a Charlie Chan story, but done with Michael Shane. Still, I have to appreciate that they sold the final clue as something more than a plot contrivance. Mike Shane really does make it seem clever. At any rate, we do turn to listener comments and feedback now. And then after that, I'll talk about the upcoming video theater episode of Michael Shane. Lori provides a thumbs up to Michael Shane. She says, "I enjoyed this one. I liked the story and thought it was well done." Well, thank you. Glad you enjoyed it. Lauren's comments, "I liked Edmund MacDonald in film. In the films Detour and Sherlock Holmes in Washington. I liked him as Michael Shane as well. Died so young at the age of 43. And that certainly is true, and it's true of a lot of actors who died at exceedingly young ages. Because Wally Mayer, the star of the show, he actually died at the age of 43 as well. And Kathy Lewis died at the age of 52. And she died of lung cancer. And that's probably a fair point to point. Many of these stars died before their time, in part to just not only the prevalence of smoking, but the amount of smoking that people did. Wally Mayer had respiratory problems throughout his life, and I can't imagine being in Hollywood in that atmosphere helped a whole lot. So yeah, it is sad. He had a lot of actors in this era dying before their time. We also have a tweet from Johnny, who writes, "Listen to the show for the first time. Love that you are keeping this form of entertainment alive." And that one was from at Warlock's Brew. Well, thanks so much. Appreciate your comment, Johnny. And now we get into discussing the upcoming video theater episode next Sunday. And it features Michael Shane. It's from the Summer Replacement series Decision. And it's a Michael Shane story starring Mark Stevens. Now, Stevens doesn't look a whole lot like Michael Shane, but that could be said of most actors who played the role. The episode aired in 1958, and it was also the basis for a pilot program. They basically took this episode of Decision, added some promotional material, and made it the pilot for the Michael Shane TV show to be shown for sponsors. And so we'll be watching that program. It's only half an hour, and it'll certainly make for interesting viewing. Ironically enough, the plot reminded me of a later Michael Shane novel that'd be written by Brett Halliday. And for the foreseeable future, for about the next year anyway, Michael Shane will be the focus of our non-Dragnet video theater. We're going through a period where all of our video theater episodes will be tied in with radio programs were airing. We started that with Ellery Queen. It'll continue with Michael Shane, then Richard Diamond, and then Boston Blackie. And we'll talk a little bit more about the actual Michael Shane TV show that aired for a 32-episode season from 1960 to 61, When we get to the point of playing it, I did just actually go through all of my Michael Shane TV shows to organize them. And so I got to see the start of each show. And there's a very interesting one with Howard McNear looking every bit the part of Floyd the Barber, doing something Floyd would never do. It's a very shocking beginning, and I'm definitely eager to play that episode, but we've got about a year to go on that. So look for Michael Shane TV shows every month, starting this month. That will do it for now. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.